July 27th, 1978. Lotta, would you like to tell us something about your background and Rabbi Tavel's background and where you met and how you came to Wilmington?
Be glad to. Many people here will remember that I came to this city in 1934 from Germany due to the Nazi regime and the persecution we went through. I was a very lucky girl because in 34 there were no concentration camps yet, and I could leave easily because I had a brother here in Wilmington, Max Friedlander, everybody will remember him, who was gracious enough to bring me here. And before I knew, I was in America and in the lovely city of Wilmington. I think if I remember right, I was the first refugee who came to the city. And so some people looked at me as one of the seven wonders of the world, but it didn't make me very happy because I never wanted to be interviewed on these conditions and situations in Germany because most of my family was still there. And whenever anybody would come over to me and said, would you tell us about what you experienced, what you lived through, I would get very frightened, and so frightened sometimes that I would say to my brother, I want to go back to Germany. It's true. I can't take that. I want to.
Okay. What city in Germany?
I came from a not very large city, a population, Pirmasens, left of the Rhine. It was a population of about 65,000 to 70,000 people. A lovely little town, and.
Now tell me about the rabbi. Where was he born?
My late husband was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. He was born, raised, and educated in Cincinnati, Ohio. At the time when he enrolled at the Hebrew Union College, it was permitted that a 14-year-old boy who still went to high school could also enroll at the Hebrew Union College. And so he would, while he attended high school, he already attended Hebrew Union College. For that reason, he was ordained at the age of 23.
That's marvelous.
Yes, but he belonged to the class of 1929. The class of 1929 was supposed to be a brilliant class. It produced people like Josh Schliebman, a very dear friend of my husband's, who wrote that book, Peace of Mind.
Right.
And so many more I could mention to you. And after my husband was ordained at the age of 23, he came to Wilmington, Delaware. He was a very young rabbi.
Did he come to Beth Emmeth, or which congregation
Beth
did
Emmeth.
He come to?
Beth Emmeth.
Had it just started, or had it been in existence
Beth Emmeth existed for quite a while. There were four rabbis before him. I don't remember them according to the time they served here, but Rabbi Levinson, I don't think that was his name. Excuse me.
That's okay. Go ahead. You want me to stop?
No. Rabbi Mishkind, who was very well known, he was my late husband was Rabbi Mishkind's successor. There were many more, but I just don't remember. Maybe two more before. Oh no, it wasn't newly established.
Okay. And where was the temple located?
Located at 911 Washington Street.
And where did you live at the time?
And I lived with my brother at 28th Street.
Okay.
No, excuse me, I made a mistake. When I came to this country, my brother picked me up on the ship and brought me to Wilmington. We lived at 14th and Washington. The Rapkins,
Right.
That was one of the first apartment houses in Wilmington.
Right.
It was very lovely then. Yeah, that's where we lived. Excuse me. Yeah.
And when you were married, where did you live?
We lived at my husband's bachelor apartment that was around 14th Street somewhere. And then we moved to Van Buren Street for a while. And then when I expected, we moved to 309 West 36th Street. We bought a house.
And how long was your husband here in Wilmington?
He came to Wilmington in 1929. And he remained here as Rabbi of Temple Beth Emes until he joined the chaplaincy during the Second World War, which was in 1942. He volunteered for the chaplaincy. No rabbi or minister is ever drafted. You have to volunteer.
Right. And where did they send you at that time?
I never forget. May I tell you a little story? I never forget. I always hoped my husband would never... I must tell you the Druze, after what I went through before I came here, I didn't think I should... I wasn't really selfish, but I thought of myself and my little girl. And I always said, I hope Henry will never sign up. But right in the beginning of when we entered World War II, we lost three of our finest young men here in Wilmington, Delaware. That was Seymour Miller, Harry Feynman, and Harry First. And my husband came, who was a very conscientious man, as many people will remember who knew him. Came home and said, Lotta, I just have to go. I have to fight for those three wonderful young men. And that is really the truth. So before we knew, he volunteered, he offered his services, and before we knew, he was at the time at a speaking engagement in New England, and a telegram was brought to me at our home, and here it was reported, such and such a time, to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. I thought the world was coming to an end, I really did. But he did, and we had to stay behind for a few months until we had housing there. And then Barbara and I, we followed him to Fort Sill, Oklahoma. He stayed there a very short time. He was, he had the rank of a first lieutenant. Every chaplain, when he first enters into the service, becomes a first lieutenant. A physician gets the rank of a captain right away. So we lived at Fort Sill for about 3-4 months. When my husband got orders to report to Harvard, to the chaplain school. At that time, the chaplain school took place at Harvard. And here we were. I was living way out in the wilderness with my little girl in a little cottage. She thought, if a wind blew it over, we'd blow over with it. But he had to go, and we had to be good sports. And he went to Harvard. And we were thinking he comes back and we keep on doing our duties. I say our duties because a chaplain's wife immediately takes over, together with her husband, his duties. There's a lot to do for a chaplain's wife. And for instance, shall I tell you what a chaplain's wife is doing? She has to help him with his Friday night services. She has to set up an Onyx Shabbat. She has to befriend herself with the soldiers and their families and show interest in their children and their well-being and many, many more things. Well, anyway, the chaplain was sent to Harvard and he came back and he says, we have to move. We weren't even settled yet. And he put back in baggage and Barbara and myself into the car, and from Fort Sill, Oklahoma, we drove to Rocker, Alabama, Dothan, Alabama. I shall never forget it. And he served a short time at Camp Rocker, Alabama, where he was assigned to the Third General Hospital, which was composed of the Mount Sinai Hospital of New York. And he was assigned to the most brilliant specialists, and it was a great honor in itself. But it didn't last very long when they received orders for overseas duty. And I never forget the morning when one of the soldiers came into my home with a little slip of paper, and on this slip was written, that's it, see that you get back to New York City with Barbara. And I never saw my husband again.
And where did he go?
I didn't know it for a long time. And then we moved back to New York. I stayed with my brother a little bit, and then I had to look for some housing in New York because our home in Wilmington was sublet to a DuPont man, and I was out, and it really was very
out of the house,
very, very uncomfortable. When we were in New York for a while, I received a phone call from Red Cross, and Red Cross told me that you can speak to your husband, but don't ask him where he came from and where he goes to. And so they arranged for us and other wives too to have a little time together.
Well, did you find out where he was?
Yes. My husband was assigned to the North African campaign and Mediterranean campaign.
I see.
And he sailed on the ship with the Mount Sinai unit. And
from there, where did he go?
First in North Africa, and then to the Mediterranean. And he was in the Mediterranean when VE Day was declared.
Right.
And he was a witness of the declaration in Caserta, Italy. And I'll never forget at the time, I don't know how many people remember that, but I do, when he sent me a cable, the war is over, you know, and he was coming home. I called up the morning news or the evening journal, I don't remember, and asked them if they knew. And they didn't know, and I gave them the message. Yeah.
That was interesting.
I don't know how many people remember that. And then that was in June. Yeah. My husband came home soon after. Yeah.
And then where did you live?
And he came back to Wilmington, Delaware. And I think, if I may say so, there was a great holiday that Rabbi Pavel came back. And he was reinstated into the congregation. But I must admit, he wasn't very comfortable anymore, because he saw so much. He was in the thick of the war, and he saw a lot of young men die, and he saw a lot of misery, and it just, his field became so broad, I think.
Right. I'd like to go back with a question to when he was serving in Wilmington at Beth Emeth. How large was the congregation? Did
very
it
small.
Grow during his time, or what was life like here during that period?
During the war.
No, before the war.
When my husband left, I think we must have had about 100 families. Maybe I exaggerate a little bit, but not anymore, I don't think so. Or maybe more, I really don't remember. We were at 9/11 Washington Street.
Right.
And it was there was already talk about building a new temple, and the land was bought already. And then the war interrupted everything. Then Rabbi Drews came to Wilmington. He's a very fine young rabbi, and he certainly helped to make the congregation grow, because new people came to the city, and it is a normal process that doesn't stand still. Yeah.
And who were some of the movers when your husband was the rabbi at 9/11? Who were some of the families that you remember that were very active in the temple?
Oh, my goodness. The Tapkeses, Tapkes families, the Ginz families, the Middleman families, the Shapiro, Sapowith. Oh, I could go on and on. Markle, Levy, Lester Levy was very active when I was first married. I think he was the president. Finkel, I could go on.
These are all Wilmington names.
Yes.
And that's what I wanted to include in this history of Beth Emeth. So that,
many more.
And now we come back to the time when he returned to Wilmington after the war.
Yeah.
And Rabbi Drews came. And where did you go?
Rabbi Drews came before my husband returned.
Before he returned from the war.
Well, while my husband served as rabbi again of Temple Beth Emes, the Pentagon kept calling him and writing to him, "Chaplain, we want you to come back to serve at the chief of chaplain's office. you are a wonderful mixer and you're a wonderful representative. Excuse me, I don't want to appear haughty, but I tell you the truth.
No, tell the truth.
And we wouldn't think of anyone else, it's the Drews, who could do it as well as you do. And one day we visited Washington, D.C. with our little girl, when she was a little girl, about 5 years old, Barbara, and we visited my husband's superior chaplain, Chaplain Parker, who came here once to speak for Temple Beth Emmaus after he came back from overseas to report on the fine work Chaplain Powell was doing. And we visited him and his family. We became very good friends. He was then the chief of chaplains, two-star general, Chaplain Parker. And he always said, Henry, you gotta come back, you gotta come back. But I always discouraged him because it was very difficult to live alone like we did during the war. And I said, we are settled now and I want to stay here. But then we took our little girl up to the Lincoln Memorial and showed her around, you know. And as I personally looked at Lincoln, he looked back at me as if he wanted to say to me, who are you to prevent your husband from going back into the chaplain's office? That's what he's supposed to do. And I turned around on my heel, and I said, Henry Ape just told me the truth. And he ran to the first telephone booth, and he said to Chaplain Parker, we called him Uncle Roy, Uncle Roy, Abe Lincoln just told Lotta I had to come back. And so we drove home with Barbara, and on the way back home to Wilmington, we said, Barbara, we might live in that city for good. And she was cute. She said, could I live with those statues all the time? Well, I think Henry announced it to the temple, and before we knew, we were back in
Washington.
In the service, yeah.
And where
as
were
a
you?
Chaplain.
Okay, and where did they, where were you living at the time?
At Chevy Chase.
Outside of Washington.
Yeah.
And how long did you stay there?
4 years. And Henry was attached to General Eisenhower's staff. He had to confer with him. And I think when they had that historical affair at the Y Center, remember?
Yes.
They showed that picture. I can show it to you.
That's all right.
And so he had a very, very important position there. But from then on, we couldn't stay there forever. We got orders to go overseas again, and my husband served at the Pentagon, we had orders to serve in Germany, in Heidelberg. He was attached there then, also a very great honor, to the European Command.
Did you go with him?
Yes, indeed, all of us, all three of us. And we lived in Heidelberg for almost 4 years. And it was a very interesting experience. Of course, it was not so wonderful for me. It brought back memories, and I thought I'd never wanted to go back to Germany, but it was my family, and it was all right.
It worked out all right.
Yes, indeed.
And when did you go to Japan?
After our tour of duty in Germany, we came back, and we were reassigned to Fort Ord, California, where we served 3 years.
It's working.
And after 3 years stationed at Fort Ord, California, which was really beautiful, the Monterey Peninsula close to Camden by the sea,
yes.
Yeah. We got orders for Japan. And we all went to Japan. It was very lucky for us because first my husband had orders for Korea, where he couldn't take us along. And he had to resettle us again. We were resettled every 2-3 years for 20 years. It was not easy, but very, very interesting.
A gypsy life.
Gypsy life, but a great education.
Right.
And he settled us in Carmel by the sea, which was beautiful in itself, but we were separated. When one day he came home and he says, guess what, they changed my orders to Japan and I'm allowed to take you with me. So we had to break up again, but that was not bad because we were very happy about it. And we lived a very interesting life for 29 months in Japan.
Where did you live
in Japan? We lived in Yokohama, the port city.
Right.
but headquarters were outside of Tokyo.
And you traveled all around Japan,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Very beautiful. It's a beautiful country, yes. Yeah. Mountains, seashore, everything.
Mm-hmm. And did you find any Jewish people there?
American Jewish people?
Any Jewish people?
Many American Jewish people. But Japan also has a... Hokkaido is way up in the mountains. We never got there, so isolated. They used to say there were Japanese Jews, yes, yeah, but we never met them. But we did meet a lot of refugees from Germany and all over Europe in Japan.
Who settled there.
I don't remember their names, but some of them went into the export-import business between Japan and Korea and became very, very wealthy. And they were very highly cultured people. We used to meet them at the Jewish Center in Tokyo. And they were very hearty to us. Until they took a liking to you, they wouldn't even want to talk to us. And they became extremely wealthy, too. And then, after a while, they befriended themselves to us, and we found some very, very interesting people. I cannot recall their names.
And
not German Jews as much as from other countries in Europe, yeah.
Actually, though, your husband's duties were with the Jews who were in the army.
And he always took it upon himself to take care of. Since you asked me, the Jews were in the army, no, not so. Because when we lived in Heidelberg, it was soon after the liberation. No?
Yes, go ahead.
There was settled in a private home in Mannheim, which is right across this, a few miles, I mean, not far from Heidelberg. After they were liberated from concentration camps and all dilapidated and down and terrible, they were offered that home, and they moved into that home, and they held services there. And when they heard that Chaplain Tavel was a chaplain by the name of Tavel was in Heidelberg, who is married to a German girl, they contacted him, and they asked him, in his free time, he should conduct services for them, and he was allowed to do that. And he conducted services for him. As a matter of fact, he used to write his sermons in English and ask me to translate it into German. And he would preach to them in German. Then they would say, an American rabbi preaching to us in German. It was a tremendous experience. And since you said, did he do anything else, I have to tell you. Then they had a little room upstairs in that house. And they said, Rabbi, we want you to see something. And they took him upstairs, and they opened the door, and there was books from the bottom to the ceiling. You couldn't breathe. It was just filled with precious, precious books. And to make a long story short, they said, we want to give you all our whole library as a present for the service you rendered to us. And my husband accepted it, and there were, I think, 2,500 volumes of Judaic, Hebraic Judaic value, tremendously valuable. And Henry says, I'd be happy to accept that from you if you permit me to donate it to my Hebrew Union College, my college in America. And they said, we don't care, of course. So the army moved all these books free of charge because of the beautiful service my husband did to all these people and kept their morale up and made it easy for the army as well as the other community. And the books were shipped to the Hebrew Union College, and it was a great, great thing. And Hebrew Union College bestowed the Doctor of Divinity upon my husband for this library, which was... It's really tremendous.
Okay.
I'm glad I told you that.
I'm glad you did, too.
Some people know that already.
I'm going...
Go ahead. Going back to the Mediterranean, I'd like to mention here, which I've forgotten before, that during my late husband's tour of duty in the Mediterranean, he met with a lot of civilian population and also army, and quite a few young men from Wilmington he met with during his tour in the Mediterranean. One of them was Dr. Leon Levy, which I remember very well. And the other one was a young man by the name of Tannen. I can't think of his first name. At the same time, the Palestinian forces were closely stationed around there. And a young Tannen fell in love with a lovely young girl who was serving within the Palestinian forces. And they fell in love and they were married. My husband officiated at their wedding in Caserta, I think it was. And
that's in Italy.
In Italy, yeah. And so the young Tannen brought his wife to Wilmington, Delaware, and they lived here for a while. They had a son together, but I think, unfortunately, his wife became very ill and she passed on since. That I remember very well. That was a lovely experience for my husband at the time. Another interesting experience he had while in Caserta, he was in charge of Dr. Dollfuss, who was the Reichskanzler of Austria at the time, and of course defeated, and a German minister by the name of Pfarrer Niemüller, who was friendly toward the Nazi regime. And they were conquered by us, and since my late husband spoke some German, he was assigned to look after those two men. And he told me at one time where Farani Müller was ready to jump out of the window, and he grabbed him by his coat and he couldn't do it. And he found that a very sad but a very interesting experience he had. He was in charge of those two men. Now, what would you like for me to tell you?
Where did you go after Japan?
When we came
after the tour of duty in Japan,
we our tour of duty in Japan lasted 29 months. It was very, very interesting. We met a lot of Japanese people. We were invited to homes, which was always a very great honor, because the Japanese people don't befriend themselves very easily to foreigners. But somehow they took a liking to us, and we were invited to several beautiful Japanese homes.
Did you meet with any Wilmington people when you were
not
in Japan?
Not in Japan. No. Yes, excuse me. I shouldn't say that. I beg your pardon. At one time, Dr. Eisendrath came to Japan with his wife. He was the head of the Central Conference for American Rabbis, and we spent a lot of time with them. And they had dinner at my house, and ever so often, yes, we used to meet one of my husband's, one of his pediatrician when he was a little boy in Cincinnati came and called on us, Dr. Weiss, ever so many people. Richard Tucker, the opera singer, we met him in Tokyo. Yes, we did. I could go on and on and on. It was a very interesting life. And after our tour of duty in Japan was finished, we were assigned to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which was also a very great honor. It's the first logistical command, which is a very important post. But I have to tell you a very funny story. When my husband was assigned as a Jewish chaplain to the first logistical command, which had no Jewish personnel in it whatsoever, the other officer says, "What do we need a rabbi for? We don't have a Jewish man in our outfit." And they told the general, and General Sink at the time knew Henry from somewhere before and took a great liking to him. And when he heard that Henry was ready for reassignment, he said, "I want that man." And so he said to his officers, "You don't look for a man's religion, you look for a man, and I'll bring you a very fine man." And so when Henry was assigned to the 1st Logistical Command, they took a great liking to him. And they became funny. And they said, "Chaplain, may we give you a title?" And he says, "What would the title be?" My late husband said, "What would the title be?" He said, "May we call you Father Otavo?" And he says, "Okay." But to make a long story short, one Sunday afternoon at our residence, the phone rang. And I answered the telephone, and there was someone calling from New York City. And the gentleman at the other end said to me, "May I speak to Father Otavo?" And I said, "There is no Father Otavo here. There is a Chaplain Otavo, but he is a rabbi." And the man at the other end said to me, "I don't care what he is, as long as he gets my boy out of the stockade." And so Henry, my husband, came to the telephone and he said, "I'll get you the best priest at the post." I thought it was a cute story to tell.
Good.
Yeah. And so he got a pit priest and he got him out of the stockade. But it was a very interesting assignment at Fort Bragg. And after Fort Bragg, in 1960, he retired from the service.
And where did he live in retirement?
He was a full colonel in the regular army, which was by act of Congress and had to be approved by, at the time, President Truman. And when you are 55 years of age, and a full colonel in the regular army, you have to retire. So he retired on a pension, and he was too young to do nothing, and so we had to look for a pulpit again, which wasn't so easy at the time, at the age of 55, to look for a new pulpit again. And we lived in Riverside, California. The rabbi became a rabbi in Riverside, California, for about 4 years.
And that was where you were?